Jeffrey Copeland is with us. He's head and professor of English at the University of Northern Iowa. He's published a new book called Inman's War, A Soldier's Story of Life in a Colored Battalion in World War II. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Sue. I appreciate that.
Tell me about the kind of an unusual way this book began.
Well, you know, my grandfather had a great statement for this. Even a blind hog finds an acorn once in a while. And this is exactly what happened here. I was actually, get this, at a flea market in Belleville, Illinois a few years back. And I was there with my family. We were just looking through the stuff at the different booths. And I came across a booth that had a suitcase, an old suitcase full of letters. And I picked up a couple of the letters in the suitcase. I started reading them. Immediately, I could tell they were World War II vintage. They were from a soldier back to a woman in St. Louis. And because I grew up in St. Louis, that immediately interested me. Well, this is so funny. Come to find out, the guy was interested in selling the suitcase. The letters were just there. Well, it was the letters that I wanted. So I negotiated for the whole thing, the suitcase and the letters and all, and ended up with about 150 letters from the soldier to his wife back in St. Louis, and about 30 letters from her back to him.
And I understand that really prompted a journey for you.
This has been the most incredible journey I think I've ever had in my life, professionally and personally both. What I discovered almost immediately, once I put the letters in chronological order, was that this gentleman who had written the letters, Inman Perkins, was he was just one of the most incredible men I think I've ever heard about in my life. As it turned out, he was in what was called at the time a colored battalion. I knew that the military was fairly segregated during World War II, but I didn't know to what extent. I knew there were stories about Buffalo Soldiers, Tuskegee Airmen, Red Ball Express, and so on, but I didn't really realize this spread so far into the fabric of the military at the time. And the bonanza here was that there were all sorts of group histories about those other groups, but there never had been written an individual personal account of what a soldier had gone through in one of those groups. So right away I knew that was the hook. That was the story that needed to be told.
Well, this man led a very interesting life even before he got into the service.
Yes, he did. One of the things that I found almost immediately was that he had a master's degree in chemistry from the University of Iowa. Iowa was one of a handful of public universities at the time to allow people of all races into the classroom together. He did a master's thesis on bromine. And at the time, this was considered like cutting-edge research because at that time, people actually thought that bromine was the great cure-all. It would help everything from scalp itch to cancer cure. And just incredible. Then he went from there to Charles Sumner High School, which was the first high school built west of the Mississippi River for African Americans. And while he was there, he married Olivia Merriweather. They had to keep their marriages secret because of rules at the time. If women got married, they had to give up their jobs. You can imagine that. So they kept that a secret. But some of the students who went through their classrooms there were Tina Turner, Arthur Ashe, Chuck Berry, and my favorite of all, Dick Gregory, who was the wife's favorite student. And he actually asked to write the introduction after he found out about the project, so he did.
And you traveled extensively to kind of research this project, didn't you?
I traveled like you couldn't believe. I went to all the places where Inman had lived. I went to all the places where he had been stationed while he was in the military. Then I had to go to the museums and the archives as well, because while it was wonderful to have this individual account, as we all know, people see things in a very narrow sort of limited way at times, and it's just one person's perspective. So I had to make sure that what was being said in the letters was indeed accurate. And that was a tremendous journey because, and I admit this was my own naivete, I kept looking through the Army for records about him and about his group. I did not know, and this took a long time to figure out, that the United States Air Force was actually not founded until 1947, after the war. And when that happened, the records of the Army Air Corps from World War II were then transferred to the Air Force. So I was looking in the wrong place. I was looking in the Army when I should have been looking at the Air Force record.
What happened to him after the war?
Well, this may give a little bit too much away to the reader, so I tell you what I'll say. I have an epilogue at the end of the book that tells what happened to all the principal characters involved.
That's a good tease.
I'm learning.
Very good. So what have you been able to learn about his military service?
One of the things I learned was that while it's deeply buried in the archives of history, what were called the colored battalions performed absolutely incredible service during the Second World War. His group was involved in the Battle of Anzio in Italy, which happened a little bit more than a month before the D-Day invasion in France. And Anzio was actually used as a ruse. It was actually used to draw the Germans and others down into Italy and away from France so the D-Day could happen. And the work that they did involving that was just incredible. It was wonderful work. Also found out that several members of his battalion were recommended for the Soldier's Medal, which is the highest honor that a soldier can get for heroism outside of the combat arena. So both in combat and out, these people were incredible.
In the introduction, it's Dick Gregory writes that it's, on one level, an ugly story about America and racism and prejudice and discrimination and sexism. It is also a human story about real people, story of friendship and loyalty, a story of the human spirit as it tries to overcome adversity. Within those letters, can you, without giving too much away, cite an example of some of the things that he faced?
Oh, sure. So in one of the things that I discovered almost immediately was that Inman Perkins actually came from a very well-to-do family. Both of his parents were college-educated. He was himself. And remember, this was right toward the end of the Depression when he was still in school, so a lot of people were suffering greatly. Not to say that his family did not suffer, but they had it better than a lot of people. So I guess because of his background and his lifestyle, when he got to the service, that was actually the first time he saw some of the major overt forms of racism that were present at the time. And in the letters, he actually wrote about them in such a way that he appeared shocked by them. He didn't say he was horrified. He didn't say, what a rotten thing this is. He didn't get into a lot of that. He just said, like to his wife Olivia, honey, you're not going to believe what I saw today. And he described, he recorded, rather than editorialized. And that's the way that I presented it in the book as well. It's for the reader to determine just how bad or how good different things happen in the book. And there's enough detail there, they'll be able to draw their own conclusions. One of the things I will tell you is that his group, the 449th, they were involved in two of the more horrible incidences of racial discrimination during World War II. And one of them I found in countless reference books and in countless archives, but it never described it. It just said flatly, and I can almost quote it, one of the most terrible incidences of racial discrimination happened at Fort Bliss in El Paso, Texas, in World War II. Well, guess what? Inman wrote about that experience in three of his letters. It was three consecutive letters. So I had the only account of that through his eyes that existed. And it was another case where even on the bases here in America, life was totally segregated for what were called the colored battalions. And they did not feel freedom. They did not feel like they belonged totally until they drove across the Mexican border into Juarez for their weekend leave. It was only there in Mexico that they discovered the sort of freedom they were fighting for. And I remember in one of Inman's letters, he said, and I can almost quote this directly, in Mexico, the only color that mattered was the color of our money.
When you saw these letters and you started reading through them, at what point did you say, oh, this is going to make a book?
I think it was probably about a third of the way through the letters when I realized that there were so many stories going at once here. There was the story of Inman Perkins and what an incredible man he was. There was the story of Charles Sumner High School. And when you think of Sumner, many people today think of the Gateway Arch in St. Louis as the gateway to the West, but we have to be honest. Sumner High School was actually the gateway to the West for most of the African Americans of that era. It was the first high school west of the Mississippi built for African Americans, And it was really a gateway to a better life for so many folks through the years. And it's still there today, and it's still doing great.
As a professor of English, and you look at these letters, it must be fascinating just from a writing standpoint. And I would assume that you would encourage all of us to hold on to those family letters.
Absolutely. You know, I can admit this. You know, I'm the head of an English department at a pretty large university. Inman Perkins wrote better than I could ever hope to write. No, there are so many stories out there that are in boxes and suitcases that are just crying and aching to be told. I found out about one last week that I may get to write, about a young woman who was involved in some of the early labor disputes in Iowa, who was actually a friend of Helen Keller. And there are massive amounts of letters from this individual to others detailing her story. So there are incredible stories out there like this that I'm afraid that they're starting to die on the vine as people start throwing that away. And it's like the story of Inman Perkins. If I hadn't been there to buy those letters that day, somebody probably would have bought that vintage suitcase, kept it, and pitched the letters. But I got the letters, and then the story was able to be told. So I feel very blessed.
We have to find, if you've intrigued us, now we want to find out how it all ends and what happens to Master Sergeant Inman Perkins and his wife and family. So we're intrigued by this. This is Jeffrey Copeland, head and professor of English at the University of Northern Iowa. The book is called Inman's War, A Soldier's Story of Life in a Colored Battalion in World War II. Pretty cool stuff.
Thank you so much. It was so fun to write.
Well, good luck to you. And you're going, I thought I read somewhere that there's going to be a book signing coming up too sometime soon. Next week, is it?
All fall. Every day the calendar gets more and more full. I'll be at University Book and Supply here in Cedar Falls this Thursday evening, the 21st at 6:30. I have a presentation that shows the pictures of all the places I went to do the research. And it's more about the birth of the book. I'll do a reading as well, but that's about that. Yeah. But I'll also be in San Francisco and Nashville, St. Louis, some other places doing readings as well.
Well, all the World War II historians will latch onto this as well, so this will be fascinating from their standpoint. So you could become a very popular guy.
I don't know about that. It may sell two copies if you buy one. No, I understand that it's selling very, very well.
Good.
Several of the bookstores are already sold out.